gentlemen, friends.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
Be as gods, you know,
catapult the propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
A satire site called the Babylon Bee ran an article last week after the Brexit vote, Britain voting to leave the European Union, and tongue-in-cheek suggested that there were an awful lot of prophecy teachers that would need to redraw their charts because many prophecies of the end times or prophetic analyses of the end times included the European Union as the revised Roman Empire from which the Antichrist would come. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. We'll talk about the prophetic implications of Brexit with our guest, who is a renowned prophecy teacher. He'll be one of the featured speakers at the upcoming Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, and the author of many books, including Psalm 83, The Missing Prophecy Revealed, Nuclear Showdown in Iran, and his latest, The Now Prophecies. It is our honor to welcome Bill Salas back to the program. Bill, welcome today.
Derek, it's great to be back on your program, and I'm looking forward to that conference and to seeing you there.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun. And a lot of important information, too. My big problem right now is I've got about 4 hours worth of material I'm trying to condense into 45 minutes. But
I know the problem. I'm speaking three times, and I need to be speaking four times to say all I want to say.
Yeah. Well, you posted an interesting article at your website, prophecydepot.net or prophecydepotministries.net. I know one prophecydepot.net will forward to the full address on the prophetic implications of Brexit. I guess, first of all, to lay groundwork for people who might not be familiar with the prophetic teaching that the revived Roman Empire coming out of a unified Europe might have some role to play in the end times. Talk about that and then how Brexit affects that.
Right. Well, traditional commentaries would say, you know, when you look at Daniel chapter 2, Daniel chapter 7, and Daniel chapter 9, and a few other scriptures, that there's going to be a revived Roman Empire. And from that revived Roman Empire, the Antichrist, will emerge. So the traditional commentary would be that this would be a European, mainly a Western centered European, you know, because the European Empire did a split, you know, around 300 or so BC. Mm-hmm. And so it had an east and a west leg of the Roman Empire as it was disintegrating.
Yeah, AD.
So that was after, reemerge.
Right. And that was after Constantine and after Theodosius the Great. It was really 5th century, but it was not ever put back together again after about the 5th century AD.
Right. Yeah. So then there's a new theory that has come out recently, over the last decade or so, that there'll be a Muslim Antichrist coming out of like Turkey or Assyria or something like that, which is, again, not the traditional commentary. So what that article I was trying to address, and it was called Brexit, the Biblical Perspective for the UK, US, and EU, was how does that really affect the concept of a Antichrist coming out of revived Roman Empire? Does this now nullify that possibility or mitigate it? And that sort of thing. So the article touched on how that actually, the departure of Britain from the European Union actually could be aligned with Bible prophecy if we understand where Britain or the UK is in Bible prophecy. I believe they are in Bible prophecy. So I start the article talking about that and their role with America. And then I get into talking about the revived Roman Empire. And then I get into talking about how the EU is going to come together, or the revived Roman Empire is going to come together out of necessity, not out of the fact that it's a good idea per se, a noble idea, noble intentions, but because it really kind of has to in light of the timing of it, because the world will be in a real state of chaos at that time. So that's what the article is about. We can touch on some of the topics inside of that. Also, I talk about why it does not argue for a Muslim Antichrist, why we still need to think about a European Antichrist.
Hmm. Well, let's dig a little deeper into the reasons that a lot of prophecy scholars through the years have believed that the revived Roman Empire had a role to play. I mean, where do we see it in Daniel? Are we talking about Nebuchadnezzar's dream, or is it the prophecy of the 70 weeks that was given to Daniel, that the the people of the prince who is to come?
Well, it's sort of all of the above. specifically, the prince that is to come is in Daniel 9. This is a secondary reference. There's multiple references as to the Antichrist in there, but to getting the origin from whence he emerges, we do go to Daniel 9, around verse 26. And it does talk about that he will come from the people who destroyed the prince that shall come will come from the people who destroyed the city and the sanctuary. The city would be Jerusalem, mm-hmm. and the sanctuary would be the second Jewish temple at that time.
Okay.
The Roman Empire did accomplish that in around 70 AD. So mm-hmm. therefore, you know, that's where we find out who he is. In Daniel chapter 7, we find that it talks about a one-world empire as the dream is being interpreted, like you talked about with Nebuchadnezzar's dream. And what happens is that it then splits off into, there'll be 10 kings, so we have like a 10-division state. So the way it's commonly taught is that ultimately a global order will emerge, a world order per se, and it will ultimately split off into a 10-division type state. Now, some people would say that that's, you know, 10 kings out of the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would say that's a whole world split up into 10 kingdoms per se, which is what I sort of subscribe to. Although those 10 kings may come out of the Roman Empire, I believe it's more dealing with a global scenario where you have a world in such a state of chaos after the fulfillment of several prior Bible prophecies, big ones, where now all of a sudden the world needs to be governed, you know, through a 10-division type state. So the Antichrist would be at the helm, and we find that out in Revelation 17. And he ultimately has these 10 kings that are in working alongside him. At some point, three of them rebel. We find this out also in Daniel, and he has to subdue them. But basically, as we get into this chaos and the world is out of control, the Roman Empire comes together, probably a loose fit when it talks about, you know, there'll be iron mixed with clay.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel also talks about that. Some people would teach that it's a loose fit government, you know, government global order. Iron and clay just don't mix when you're dealing with the 10 toes in Daniel's prophecies. But basically, they'll come together out of necessity, and they will then try to put the world back together, per se. Like Humpty Dumpty had a big fall,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
All the king's men and all the king horses couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together, but they're going to try. Three of them will rebel. Though ultimately, in Revelation 17, 16, it says that these 10 kings at the command of the Antichrist will actually desolate the harlot world religion. There'll be a world religion going on at that time. And then ultimately the Antichrist comes on the scene and he introduces his religious jeopardy, which is, you know, he's above all that's called God. He will actually go into the Jewish temple, the third Jewish temple at that time.
Mm-hmm.
In Matthew 24, we're told this verse 15, he'll abominate that temple. He'll do an abominable act. And Christ is telling the Jews at that time, you need to flee, because he will then be trying to come out and commit Jewish genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's kind of a summary of why the Roman Empire has to come back into play, and the Antichrist comes out of that. And it's in, see, the EU, the reason I'm taking the time to explain all this, Derek, is the EU right now was sort of devised as, you know, to prevent the continued wars they were having,
right,
especially after World War II. They wanted to try to model it after the United States, which at that time, about 40, 50 years back, was, you know, really becoming the dominant world empire after World War II. So the British Empire was on the decline. You know, there's a time up to 1917, 1920, where it was said the sun never sets on the British Empire. It controlled over 458 million people in the world, had sovereignty over that, which was about a quarter or a fifth of the world's population. It had control over 13 million square miles of the world. And, you know, the sun literally would rise in the east and set in the west. And the British Empire had control over that stuff. But it was on a rapid decline between 1920 and 1990. And America was on a rapid emerge after World War II.
Right.
So the European Union thought it would be a noble idea to, why can't we unite as England, France, Spain, etc.? We are close in proximity to each other. We've got some language barriers, economic barriers, cultural barriers, you know, this sort of thing. But the thing is, it was a good idea. The problem is, it just doesn't work. It's like putting a round peg into a square hole, mm-hmm. or oil mixing with water. We were birthed in unity in the United States. They've had centuries of divisions and things like that. So anyway, that's just sort of a history of the issue. And when this Brexit thing happened, right out the bat, a lot of people said, well, there you go. There won't be a revived Roman Empire. There'll be other countries that'll follow with their own referendums. And now, therefore, that paves the way for an Islamic Antichrist coming out of Turkey. Turkey's got this big deal going on because they're normalizing relationships with Israel. They're thinking Erdogan might be the candidate, you know, president of Turkey, mm-hmm. might be a candidate for the Antichrist. So, you know, now this just opens a whole hornet's nest of different theories now. And so I try to explain why let's stay fastened to the scriptures and mm-hmm. not jump to conclusions here.
Yeah, people of the prince coming from the people who are to come. And of course, in the Romans in 70 AD were the ones who took down the temple. I see the point that Turkey was the Eastern Roman Empire when the two split and continued on as the Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, until the 15th century. But the Antichrist is one who's going to unify a lot of people, is going to get the Jews to follow him, at least for a time. And I just don't see that happening with an Islamic Antichrist. That doesn't seem plausible in any scenario that I can create in my head.
Dr. David Reagan wrote a really good book on that subject called The Man of Lawlessness. I got it right here. The Man of Lawlessness, the Antichrist, and the Tribulation. And mm-hmm. what he did was he put a panel of guys together, some of them who will be at this conference coming up with you guys, Skywatch and Prophecy Watchers, and at Pikes Peak, the Rocky Mountain Conference in July mm-hmm. 2016. And he interviewed them. I was one of them. And he asked, you know, what are our opinions on the Antichrist? And could he be a Muslim and that sort of thing? So it's a really outstanding book. And some of the main reasons it was decided it couldn't be, of course, you stick to Daniel 9:26, which it was the Roman Empire, is that no Jew would really entrust the Israel's security, no Jewish leader, to a Muslim, plus a Muslim who would be an Antichrist and declare himself to be above all that's called God, that'd be a fatwa on his life, because, yeah. you know, you can't, you know, there's Allah and you cannot, and Muhammad is his prophet, you can't say you're above that. The other one I say is when you look at the wars, the Muslim wars, predominantly Muslim wars against Israel and the Middle East, of Psalm 83, which is those countries that surround Israel. We can talk about that more if you want. But there's also another war, Ezekiel 38, with countries that aren't even listed in Psalm 83 or vice versa. These wars, I believe, will happen before the Antichrist comes on the scene. These types of wars will be major. And it will. So Psalm 83 would be like a punch to the gut of Islam. Ezekiel 38, which I believe would follow. Mm-hmm. So there's 10 populations in Psalm 83, predominantly Muslim. There's 9 populations in Ezekiel 38, big populations, Iran, Turkey, Russia, and stuff like this. They're predominantly Muslim, except Russia. And they're going to take a shellacking. So Ezekiel 38 would be like a punch to the jaw. So by the time the Antichrist is on the scene, I believe Islam is different. It's compromised. Mm-hmm. It's down for the count, really, the 10 count, never to recover again.
I agree.
So some people would disagree with me, but there's many other reasons in the Dr. David Reagan book that these guys gave as to why he can't be a Muslim Antichrist. And your viewers need to remember that this is a paradigm shift in teaching, this Muslim Antichrist thing, mainly proposed by Joel Richardson, Waleed Shubat, Joseph Farah with WorldNet Daily. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's caught on, and it's certainly worth understanding. I have not been convinced to shift my thinking from the traditional teaching that he is coming out of the revived Roman Empire, not a Muslim, this type of thing.
Yeah. No, I agree. I can't conceive of a plausible scenario in which that works. It's a popular teaching because certainly the Muslims make for a very convenient villain right now. But similarly, you know, when during the height of the Cold War, there were some who perceived Russia to be the the source of the Antichrist. I mean, whoever the villain du jour seems to be the one that is picked on as a potential source for the Antichrist. You know, even our current president in some recent poor exegesis. The Antichrist will come from a revived Roman Empire. Brexit in your view, then, it does not affect the long-term prospects of some form of a revived Roman Empire producing the man of lawlessness.
Right. And I don't necessarily think the revived Roman Empire, it may or may not include Britain. You know, I'll tell you, when I saw, I expected Brexit, I expected Britain to exit and the vote to go that way, even though the polls showed otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. I believe that Britain, and in my book called The Now Prophecies, I talk about there's a chapter in there called Is America in Ezekiel 38? And I put forward the argument that we are. You know, we're hard to find in Bible prophecy, but if we are in Bible prophecy, I believe that's where we are. And it says in Ezekiel 38 that there's, you know, Ezekiel 38, let's just take a moment on this, and then I'm going to tell you why I believe Britain is also involved in there. Ezekiel 38 is this very descriptive prophecy. It encompasses Ezekiel 38 and 39. There's 52 verses of the most descriptive biblical prophecies, I think, anywhere in the Bible. You know, a lot of the prophecies, Derek, as you know, you've got to glean a little something from Isaiah. You know, Isaiah 17 talks mm-hmm. about the destruction of Damascus. You probably pick up some more details in Jeremiah chapter 49, verses 23 through 27 about Damascus. And you try to put these pieces together to get a pretty good camera angle of how the prophecy is going to, you know, fulfill itself or be fulfilled. But you don't have to really do that in Ezekiel 38 and 39. It's just right there. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to walk away from those verses and come away with a pretty good understanding. It's who's going to, you've got these nine populations are going to come attack Israel. Israel's the victim. They're the attackers. The Lord destroys it. We're told through an earthquake, fire, hailstone, brimstone. It's a really big deal. It won't be the Israeli Defense Forces. It won't America. Tells us about what happens after the defeat. They'll be, you know, burying the dead for 7 months. They'll be burning the weapons for seven. In other words, it gives you the whole, as we say in California, the entire enchilada, and that prophecy is right there for you. You don't have to go perusing through other scriptures necessarily to get it. So the point being is that I believe the Lord had Ezekiel write all those descriptions because that is the marquee event in the latter days, we're told, in this prophecy, where he is going to let the world know he's the holy God. It says, I will make my holy name known in the midst of my people Israel. They shall not profane it anymore, and the nation shall know I'm the Lord, the Holy One in Israel. That's in Ezekiel 39:7. That's after he stops that invasion. Okay, well, there's nine populations attacking. There's Israel, so we got 10 parties involved. There's the Lord, we've got 11 parties involved, but there's more parties involved, and this is where we get into Brexit, per se, mm-hmm. in America. And that's in Ezekiel 38, verse 13.
Okay.
And basically what it's saying there is there's Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish and their young lions, and they're basically seem to be protesting these evil intentions of Russia. We're told Ezekiel 38:10 that there's an evil plan that's devised, and here's this group, this additional four populations in the prophecy, and they're saying, what are you doing to the invaders? Are you coming for plunder and great booty? Meaning Israel will be very prosperous at the time. And so Russia, we believe, is the spearhead of this. And you got Turkey, Iran, some of the breakaway republics of the Soviet Union and the southern steppes of Russia. You've got some of the North African countries, maybe Tunisia, Morocco, etc. They're coming after Israel's plunder and booty. So who are these four populations? Okay, mm-hmm. they don't seem to be fighting alongside Israel. They don't seem to be attacking Israel with Russia's cohorts. And so we have to figure out who they are too. Well, Sheba would be Yemen, more than likely. Dedan would be Saudi Arabia. Some people say that would, like Gary Stearman believes, this they would be also part of the global GCC, global of the Gulf Cooperative Council.
Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, yep.
Arab states by the Persian Gulf, mm-hmm. across from Iran. Anyway, but who's the merchants of Tarshish and their young lions? Well, I believe the merchants of Tarshish is the UK. The arguments are they could be Spain or the UK. Those are your common arguments. I've looked at them all and go to great lengths to explain why it's the UK, in my estimation. Okay, and then there's the young lions, meaning who came out of the loins of the UK Of course, you had Canada, America, Australia. Mm-hmm. So I would put, I'm going to put America in there for various reasons I explained in that chapter in the Now Prophecies book. So, okay, here, let's ask ourselves this then. First of all, they're protesting. They're not fighting alongside Israel. They don't appear to be. And yet we've got the number one world-ranked army in the world presently. Mm-hmm. Now, this prophecy hasn't happened yet, but so something may happen to mitigate our involvement. We certainly understand why the UK right now, the Merchants of Tarshish, if that's who they are, would not fight against Russia and this big coalition, because they're a fragment of what they used to be. The sun is always setting on the British Empire now. They have control over about 64 million people, not 458 million. Mm-hmm. They have control over about 94,000 square miles, not 13 million square miles. They're not really in a position to fight off Russia. But what about America? The young lions, if that's us, we certainly should be able to. So concerns there, what happens to us? I believe we are in decline as a country. And that's also a chapter in the Now Prophecies book, The Decline of America. But so when back to Brexit now, okay, the long answer that you didn't necessarily want, you're getting. when the UK severed ties recently with Europe, the EU, to me, that positioned this prophecy even closer. I believe this. Many of us believe this Ezekiel 38 prophecy is drawing very near, because now you have the UK out kind of on its own. They're going to be now needing to build economic relationships probably apart from the EU. I think they're going to get their hand slapped a little bit for bailing out of the EU, and they're going to look for other commercial interests externally, and they will look to Israel, who's now burgeoning as a world-class economy. Which is also biblical prophecy, the prosperity of Israel in the end times. And I think you're going to see that, you know, this fits just perfect, because there they are out there, the merchants of Tarshish, commercial relationships. The Hebrew word is sakar for merchants in Ezekiel 38:13, which is dealing with customers, traffickers, merchants. So it's a good translation, the merchants of Tarshish and their young lions. Having commercial interests in Israel, America right now, is involved in those natural gas discoveries that Israel's made in outside Haifa in the Mediterranean Sea, the Tamar 1 and the Leviathan. These are big natural gas discoveries, and America's involved in trying to develop those with Israel. So we've already got commercial interests involved in this sort of thing. So anyway, with that all said, to me, the revived Roman Empire will happen out of necessity. It may not include the UK. The UK, I believe, has got its own prophecy, along with America and Ezekiel 38:13.
The necessity of a revived Roman Empire, you touched on that, and I should point out that in recent news, and I think this was just published on Thursday of this week, the Italian banking system had, in the wake of Brexit, tried to use that as an excuse for needing a rather large bailout, which the Germans did not want to approve, but somehow they managed to sneak it through anyway. The Italians were looking at a 40 billion euro bailout of their banks. But that's the type of thing that could be used to justify a greater centralized control over over the economic fortunes of the rest of Europe. You know, we don't want to do this, but we have to do this in order to stabilize markets and restore prosperity, blah, 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 blah. Essentially, what it means is that the central banks get to transfer money directly to their buddies in the banking system, similar to what happened here in the U.S. after 2008. The fortunes of Israel, though, that's interesting, because that was something that had always seemed slightly implausible, too, because Israel is, population-wise, it's not one of the major players on the global stage. In fact, I was surprised as I was preparing for a chapter that I contributed to a book recently in looking at the number of adherents of the world's religions. Number one, of course, is Christianity, 2.2 billion people around the world. Islam, 1.6 billion, on track to pass Christianity as the number one religion in the world by about midway through the 21st century. But the Jews, they're not even on the top 10. They're not even in the top 10 on that list, about 14 million worldwide. And yet they are so central to the world's geopolitical scene. It argues for the supernatural nature of the conflict for Israel and especially for the Temple Mount, ultimately. But you point out the natural gas discoveries in the Mediterranean, the Tamar field, the Leviathan field, and then recently what appears to be some rather major oil discoveries on the Golan Heights, which the rest of the world still says is Syria, not Israel. Right. So now suddenly we're seeing what might be an incentive for somebody to try to come into Israel and take a spoil, as you're pointing out there in Ezekiel 38. This week, as we're recording this, Israel and Turkey restored relations, or they're normalizing relations, which were broken in 2011 after the, or was it 2011 or 2010? I just looked it up and now I don't recall.
2010.
Yes. The MV Mavi Marmara, the Freedom Flotilla ship that was boarded by Israeli soldiers. Nine Turkish nationals died in that raid, and then a tenth died 3 years later of his injuries. What do you see going on with these new diplomatic initiatives, not just between Israel and Turkey, but also Israel and Russia? Because Benjamin Netanyahu and Vladimir Putin have been making nice here in recent weeks.
Yeah. You know, this is all converging. All these are very important. Let's look at, I want to answer that question. I'm going to just touch on the three or four topics you just talked about. Right now, the EU is all in. I mean, they are in a position where they have to continue to try to be cohesive. There's going to probably be some other attempts at referendums to get out. Some have already talked about this. So the EU really is trying to be a effective global marketplace, be involved in it and that sort of thing. So they really don't, it really can't collapse. They're going to do all they can to keep it together, Germany especially, France as well. So you know, they're going to have concerns and issues over there. And like we talked about earlier in the segment, they will come together out of necessity. When you look at the prophecies that are going to happen in the Middle East especially, they will have global impacts. But probably the least adversely affected will be the Roman Empire, the EU. You know, Russia is going to be affected, Iran's going to be affected, the Middle East is going to be affected, et cetera. The rapture of the church, if that were to happen, that would affect a lot of places, certainly would affect the EU a little bit. There's, you know, some Christians over there, of course. But bottom line is these other Middle East-driven prophecies, probably some of the least affected would be the Roman Empire. Therefore, when in a world in chaos, will look for some leadership, some governance, and they will invite this revived Roman Empire, and they will invite this world leader to come out of them. That's how I would analyze that. So we look at that. Now you look at the Israel's economies burgeoning, okay, because this segues into what you're talking about with Turkey and with Russia. You made a good comment. Here's the Jewish people. What are they, 14 million, 15 million? Planet, 6 to 7 billion people?
Yeah.
How can they muster up the kind of economy or army that the Bible says they will have in the end times? The Bible says they'll have an exceedingly great army in Ezekiel 37:10. And in all my books, I usually talk about the other prophecies dealing with the Israeli Defense Forces today existing in fulfillment of biblical prophecy. Right now, they're ranked as number 11 armies, and I think that's an underestimate. That's on the global firepower ranking on the internet. They're actually going to win some wars. Psalm 83, they'll probably be involved in, I believe, in Isaiah 17, the destruction of Damascus. Isaiah 17, verse 9, I think, tells us that. So it won't be long before they shoot up in the top five, probably. Mm-hmm. Let's say the top 10 out of 190-plus countries in the world. I mean, so we already see that this is existing in fulfillment of Bible prophecy. We think they've got a couple hundred nuclear weapons, their worst-kept secret. Now let's talk about their economy. In Ezekiel 36, Ezekiel 38, we see this Israel that's going to come back and redevelop the land, and they're going to be very prosperous. And we're seeing that happening. You know, they're just like you said, the natural gas discoveries, the oil discovery around the Golan and this sort of thing. Somehow they're going to get to a point where Russia feels like they need to come after the booty and plunder that Israel possesses. Mm-hmm. I can give my reasons for that. It's speculation. But, you know, by the time all these prophecies happen, Russia's going to say, hey, if we can get rid of that, you know, that burgeoning Israel's economy, we can pretty much control the world. I believe, you know, that I think it's possible Ezekiel 38 happens after several Middle East wars, maybe even after the rapture of the church. So therefore, what stands between Russia, who's and the top three producers of oil in the world? Of course, Iran's now back in the hunt with their, you know, back with their nuclear deal. They're getting $150 billion.
Yes.
So, you know, you add all this together with these countries that are predominantly Muslim, who are going to be upset, already are upset with Israel, who are going to be really upset with Israel if they destroy Syria and Isaiah 17 and Psalm 83, those other Arab countries. And Russia's going to have no problem putting this coalition together. And basically under the premise that we get rid of Israel, we can pretty much probably control the world. That's how I see that playing out. And, of course, the Lord stops that. We talked about that in Ezekiel 38 verses,
right.
You know, whatever, 13 through Ezekiel 39, 6. And now all of a sudden the world's in serious trouble. Russian armies decimated, Iranian army, governments are collapsing. Now you need a revived Roman Empire. Now, Syria and Turkey and Russia, okay? Erdogan and Benjamin Netanyahu are becoming strange bedfellows, mm-hmm. okay? I mean, like you said, they're trying to normalize relationships, and Turkey for the deal is going to get about $20 million.
Right.
So they're going to be able to, you know, say they can slam dunk the football in the end zone and say, look, we just, you know, we got Israel to concede $20 million to deal with the repercussions of the Mavi Marmara incident and this sort of thing. It's creating a stir in Israel. It's creating a stir in the Arab world. A lot of the Knesset is not happy about this with Benjamin Netanyahu. But what you're not hearing is the understory. You know, what this now means is that Turkey can be involved with Israel in its economic growth, and especially with the natural gas, which Turkey wants to get, because a lot of its natural gas comes from Russia.
Right.
This sort of stuff.
Right.
So now all of a sudden, Israel becomes a player in the global commerce. And Israel also nullifies the concerns that are developing about littoral rights, with respects to the waters over the maritime issues of the natural gas in Haifa. So basically at this point with Turkey and Russia coming together, Turkey and Israel coming together, you can look, that $20 million is probably just a small investment for what's going to happen with the potential economies of Turkey and Israel. Now Russia's been involved in Syria. And they're flying planes over there. And now, you know, they say they're going to get out of the Syrian conflict. They said that several months mm-hmm. ago. They really haven't yet on any level that we could acknowledge.
Right.
So a lot of lip service there. But Netanyahu's been over and seen Vladimir Putin several times ever since Russia got involved in the Syrian revolution. And he's even gone recently. And so people are thinking, well, what's this situation? Why is he buddying up with Russia? Well, a couple things. First of all, Israel is extremely isolated. Our president has really turned our back on Israel as far as a nation. So Israel's never been more isolated, really, in the global community than probably ever in its history than it is right now.
Right.
So, you know, you'd say, well, he's trying to make friends and this sort of thing. But it's very strategic. See, there's planes flying all a stone's throw away from the Israeli border by the Golan Heights. Russian planes, Syrian planes, Arab planes from Jordan. You know, remember, we're involved through Obama with Operation Inherent Resolve. So we've got planes, American planes. We've got jets flying all over. These things are not in the news that much, but it's a very dangerous situation, very volatile. So Netanyahu and Israel are providing intelligence as to, you know, what planes are flying where and helping the people out so that they don't have these conflicts.
Yeah.
You know, Turkey shot down a Russian plane when Russia got involved. We almost had an American-Russian plane collide recently as well. So, you know, one missile falling in Israel could trigger a major issue for Israel getting involved and lashing out. And there's already talk from Israeli commanders that the next war will be a major war. And if it involves Hezbollah to the north in Lebanon, Israel will have to fend off about 1,100 Iranian-sponsored missiles that are not little Katyushas coming into Israel with pinpoint accuracy, and this is going to create a biblical war. You watch if this happens. So the last war they had in Lebanon in 2006 with Hezbollah, 34-day campaign, 4,000 missiles launched, and many Israelis in northern Israel in bomb shelters for about a month. That was triggered by the kidnapping, I think it was two Israeli soldiers. I mean, that's kidnapping. Mm-hmm. Now, if we talk a missile accidentally hitting, you know, inside of Tel Aviv by mistake, what's that going to trigger? Yeah. So, you know, this is a very livid situation over there.
Mm. It's been reported by Debka File, which is an Israeli-based news outlet that claims military and intelligence connections, that part of the deal between Netanyahu and Putin was Putin's promise that terrorists would not be allowed to set foot in southern Syria, and that a detachment of Palestinians who'd been trained by Hezbollah for missions inside Israel were then redeployed to go fight alongside Hezbollah inside Syria to try to knock out the Islamic State. If that's true, maybe there is some benefit to Israel for their cooperation with Russia, especially if Israel sees the possibility of a continuity of the Obama administration's policies with the next president.
Yeah, and that's another interesting topic, too, these presidential elections. Everybody's heavily focused on America on those. But, you know, at this point, Israel's got the leadership in place, especially with the recent appointment of their defense minister, Avigdor Lieberman, at the end of May 2016. They're in a position to defend the nation like never before. You know, it's like Joshua and Caleb of the Old Testament, you know, going into the land of Canaan. But, you know, they're being billed, this new administration here with Netanyahu's new guy, Lieberman, as the most right-winged administration in Israel's history. So, you know, Israel is not doing anything right now that's not strategic. They are really preparing for the worst, because the worst could mean the destruction of the Jewish state.
Yeah.
So they are in a position right now where everything they're doing is strategic, and they're going to take matters in their own hands, and that's biblical prophecy. Diplomacy's failing. The world wants Israel to contract and give up land for peace. That's not what the Bible says is going to happen. Israel is going to expand because Jews are still coming into the area, and they win wars, they take territory. This happened in 1967, happened in Joshua 3,300 years ago, King David 3,000 years ago. You know, so we're looking at a situation that is, from a biblical perspective, is nothing that the secular world is prepared for or even thinking about. We're going to look at an Israel that's going to blow people away, in my estimation, and probably very soon. And the leadership is now in place. I think they're prepared to go to war like they've never been prepared before. When you look at Israel's history, when they had weak kings, bad kings, apostate kings, like King Zedekiah, the last king of the southern kingdom of Judah, he was the one that went into the final deportation, you know, of the Babylonian conquest over the southern kingdom of Judah. When you look at, there's other examples, but when you look at like Israel's leaders in the past, like Gideon with 300 men army, or you look at King David and King Solomon who won their wars, or Joshua and Caleb, I think you're looking at the leadership today that resembles that, but not the King Zedekiah and that sort of thing. So we're in a situation right now where I would just tell your viewers, something is probably going to give. The Lord's got all the kings in the right places. We're told in Daniel 2, I think it's verses 20, 21, something like that, that it's the Lord that changes times and seasons and establishes, removes and raises kings and this sort of thing. So we've seen a lot of shifting going on since the Arab Spring. And now we look at Israel, and they are ready. If something came their way, they are ready to do some serious business. It'll be a prison rules fight.
Jim Fletcher made a real interesting comment when I talked to him last year one time. He said, you know, God is pretty clear in prophecy what happens to the countries that come up against Israel in the end time. So while the situation in Israel is obviously unsettled, and it's understandable that people are nervous about it, he said, I really feel sorry for those countries that think that somehow they're going to take down Israel, because they're not going to get out of this one alive.
No, that's a really good assessment. Jim is a sharp guy and a friend. And no, that's really it. I mean, we don't think about that, you know. And the other thing that I would comment on that is that when you read these prophecies, you find that Israel wins these conflicts, but they are not necessarily the aggressor nation. Mm-hmm. They are really responding in self-defense, which is how they've always sort of been. I mean, they, you know, Hamas fires rockets into southern Israel. Israel retaliates, you know, this sort of thing. Lebanon starts a war, Israel retaliates. So, you know, we need to give Israel a little credit. They're doing the best they can to exist over there. But the bottom line is they are predicted, their Israeli defense forces are going to become an exceedingly great army, according to Ezekiel 37:10. We're seeing that develop right now. your viewers should be excited. They're actually seeing another aspect of Bible prophecy being fulfilled, the Israeli Defense Forces. And they're not involved in Ezekiel 38 and 39, where that's, the Lord stops that massive invasion. Mm-hmm. And they're not involved in the Armageddon campaign. Jesus Christ stops that. So what are they involved in? They're involved in these issues they're dealing with right now, preservation of the nation, the protection of the borders they've got going on. And I believe they're involved in Psalm 83, Isaiah 17, and in Jordan, Jeremiah 49 with Jordan and other places. So very fascinating time to be alive. But I would just tell your viewers, they need to buckle their seatbelts, hold on to their hats, because I think something's going to explode. And the American elections, no matter who wins, they're not going to be able to prevent what's going to happen. Whoever it is, Trump, Hillary Clinton, whatever, they're going to come into office and experience world events that I don't even think Ronald Reagan would be able to handle. You know, whoever it is, they're going to be dealt a hand that is just pretty much how they're not even going to know how to respond to it. And they're not coming from the biblical perspective. So they won't necessarily have the answers unless they have a Damascus Road experience like, you know, Saul did, the Apostle Paul. I mean, right now they're secular. And they need to understand these biblical prophecies. They're going to have a clue about what to do.
Now, we're going to post this program on the 10th of July, which is a week from just over a week from when we're recording this. And of course, that'll be less than a week from the opening of the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, which begins on the 15th. We'll be there. We'll see you there. Many other people there. Not only has the conference been sold out since December, but the live streaming is still available, at least as of this recording. I don't know when Bob Ulrich is going to have to cut things off, because I know he's going to have to travel to the Springs and probably drive a big truck as well. For people who are either going to be there or are going to watch the live stream, Bill, what are you going to touch on in your talks?
Well, I'm teaching from the Now Prophecies book. And I'm going to break it up into two segments. The main room segment on, I believe it's Saturday night, I'm going to probably deal with the biblical indictment of America. I'm going to just talk about, unfortunately, the decline of America, how we've kicked God away. I'm going to indict America. I'm going to let the audience be the jury. And I know what my verdict is, guilty as charged. But I'm going to let them make their own choices. I'm going to lay out the Supreme Court cases. I'm going to hammer it home like probably I'm not sure that anyone's done before. You know, Jonathan Cahn and the others have been warning about America's concerns, the harbingers and stuff like that. But now it's time to indict America so that we can be real clear on what's going on. You know, are we going to have a Nineveh moment? Are we going to repent nationally? Or are we going to have a Jeremiah 7:16 where the Lord even told Jeremiah, don't even pray for these people anymore. They will not listen. It's time for judgment. And I'm going to lay out a lot of stuff. It's real powerful. The next session will be Sunday in the Aspen Room, and I'm going to be talking about the Now prophecies of the Middle East. You know, all these other prophecies that are very important, Isaiah 17, Psalm 83, Jeremiah 49, Isaiah 19, etc. Ezekiel 38 as well. The banquet, I think we're designing the banquet. I'm speaking there. I think Gary Stearman and I are going to just do questions and answers. I might talk a little bit, but I think we're trying to open it up to answer questions from the audience. And that has been sold out also for a long time. So I don't know if that's live stream. So if they got a banquet ticket, they're going to be in store for a real treat.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I have been tasked with setting up the schedule for the on-camera interviews. So I'll try to find a spot in your schedule to get you into the interview room. And that'll be on the DVD set afterward. But I look forward to seeing you again, Bill. It's been a couple of years. So it's going to be a wonderful gathering. And I can't wait.
Awesome. And congratulations to you and Sharon getting involved with Skywatch TV and your radio shows. I mean, it's neat to watch the Lord use you too in this capacity.
Now, it's a blessing. This is, as I've said before, this is what I wanted to do when I was a kid. You know, my normal friends wanted to grow up and be baseball players or cops or whatever. I wanted to be a talk show host. So,
and a singer, an acapella singer.
Yeah. Yes, in my spare time. Bill Salas is the author of The Now Prophecies. His website, prophecydepot.net. There'll be a link in the show notes. Bill, we'll see you in Colorado Springs.
All right.
Again, check out Bill's website at prophecydepot.net. Prophecydepot.net, you'll find the show notes, or the link in the show notes, rather. As always, we put them all there at vftb.net for your consideration, and take advantage of them. He's got a lot of articles that he posts there that have some impact on Bible prophecy. And we just try to make sense of what's coming up in the world ahead. It can be, there's a temptation to maybe read too much into the headlines of the day, but on the other hand, it just pays to be informed as to what's going on. And as I'm recording this on the afternoon of July the 8th, getting ready to post this up for the weekend, there have been a couple of events around the world that are of some importance. Another Shia holy site was hit by the Islamic State north of Baghdad. At last time I checked the headlines, it was several dozen people injured, and that situation looks like it's not getting any better anytime soon. People there are still recovering in Baghdad from the bombing last weekend, which claimed lives of more than 250 people. It is, it's the work of the God of this world and his minions as they seek to keep us divided and at one another's throats. And we're seeing evidence of that here in the United States as well, as yesterday, five Dallas police officers, four with the Dallas PD, one with the transit police, were killed in what was apparently a coordinated ambush. Apparently four snipers picking off the police officers as they were drawn to the scene. Now, I don't have much in the way of details, but it is an ugly situation that will likely increase tensions, especially racial tensions here in the United States. There are, of course, those who profit from keeping Anglo-Americans and African-Americans at one another's throats, but certainly the true beneficiary is, are those entities that have rebelled against God and seek to destroy us all. And if we begin to hate our brothers and sisters for whatever reason, we are already taking the bait that the enemy has put forward. So an ugly situation there. Next week will be a very busy week. In fact, it's very busy right now. I'm still struggling to get my presentation together for the Rocky Mountain International Prophecy Conference, proving once again that my father knew what he was saying when he said, when you ask Derek the time, he tells you how to build a watch. Judging by the amount of content that I've generated so far, I'm looking at about an hour and 15-minute presentation and trying to cram that into 45 minutes. I'm not going to do that just by talking faster. Back in my high school debate days, that would have been the solution. You get 12 minutes of content into an 8-minute speech by just speaking. But the goal there was to just cram as much evidence down the judge's throat as possible. Here, you're actually trying to communicate thoughts and ideas, you know, using words and stuff like that. So we'll see. This weekend is going to be the test. But you'll get this on Sunday. Next week, the 17th, to be honest with you, I don't think there's going to be a view from the bunker. We will have a Gilbert House Fellowship this Sunday before we head out for Colorado Springs. That's our weekly Bible study, where Sharon and I devote an hour each to the New Testament and to the Old Testament. We're going through the Bible chronologically, the order in which the stories recorded occurred. We're just at the point of, the Passion Week for Jesus in our New Testament study. Old Testament study, we're coming up on the end of the life of David. But because we're reading chronologically, we're skipping back and forth between David's life and some of the Psalms. So you get, I think, deeper insight into what those Psalms are about when you understand the mindset of the man who was writing many of them. You'll find that posted, should be by midday Sunday, at gilberthouse.org. That's the website for the Gilbert House Fellowship, gilberthouse.org. Sharon and I will be leaving for Colorado Springs middle of next week. We'll be back the following Tuesday, so we'll be gone for nearly a week. And again, no Gilbert House Fellowship on the 17th, and probably no view from the bunker either, unless by some chance I can manage to pull together a program out of the multitude of interviews that I'll be conducting next weekend. It'll be a long weekend, but a productive weekend and a blessed weekend. God willing, everybody travels safely. And I'll have the opportunity to interview perhaps as many as two dozen of the top experts in Bible prophecy, archaeology, and geopolitics around the world. So that, for me, makes the whole trip worthwhile. And then somehow I wound up with the very final speaking slot. That was Bob Ulrich, I guess, giving me the opportunity to get the interviews out of the way before having to deliver my talk. The downside of that means, of course, if I run long on my talk, I'm standing in between people and their flight home. So I need to get this condensed, and I need to get it done this weekend. So I appreciate your prayers for that. Coming up in the weeks ahead, we are likely going to have John Haller back on the program. We want to talk a little bit about showing one another a little grace when we disagree over interpretation of prophecy. It's been weighing on my heart a bit lately as I've been contacted by folks who are angry that I'm not presenting one side or another of Bible prophecy. I would just encourage us all to remember that the apostles didn't understand Old Testament prophecy of the Messiah's first coming. If you recall, Acts chapter 1, Jesus has been resurrected for 40 days, and what do the apostles ask? Will you restore the kingdom to Israel now? They still didn't get it. And I believe that was by design. God deliberately obscured his battle plan from the rulers of this world, the archons. That's the word used in 1 Corinthians when Paul writes that the rulers of this world didn't understand or they wouldn't have crucified the Lord of glory. I suggest that we won't understand the prophecies of his second coming any more clearly until after it's happened. And so perhaps as long as we're in agreement on the core doctrines of Christianity, that perhaps we can disagree a little more amiably when it comes to prophecy. Pre, mid, post, pre-wrath, wherever you fall on that timeline, premillennial, amillennial, I know that's the majority view of most of the world's Christians. Postmillennial, we might have to have a discussion because I think there could be some serious errors that arise from postmillennialism, but just because you're postmillennial doesn't mean you're not saved. And we as Christians need to remember that before we turn the guns inward when we've got wolves howling just outside the door. A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod. His website is incompetech.com. And please remember, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.